Pennsylvania and America are at a crossroads. After 4 years of division, and just over a month since a failed coup at the United States Capitol,
second floor,
we face a question of who we want to be as a country. But we also face a recognition what's been broken has been broken for more than 4 years. We have to answer the question at the heart of every campaign. Who should government work for? We need policies that actually speak to working families and lift them up. We have to choose. Are we going to go down the path of darkness? Or are we ready to bring a new day to Pennsylvania?
It's a race. It is Friday, February 19th, 2021. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coup podcast. And yes, indeed, that was Malcolm Kenyatta making his announcement for this run for U.S. Senate. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week I talk to our unemployed Trump staffer, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. On today's show, we're streaming live on YouTube right now too as well. It's been a freaking great run over there. Very, very excited. So don't forget to head on over to our YouTube channel, smash that subscribe button, hit the bell so you know every time we go live. On today's show, Rush died. In other news, devastation in Texas as climate change supercharged a winter storm caused a loss of power and water for millions of people. And yes, wouldn't you know, Texas Governor Greg Abbott doesn't waste any time trying to blame green energy and frozen windmills for the crash of their power grid. Yeah, that's one way to try to avoid accountability, but scratch the surface of that little fascist lie and you expose the awful truth. Yes, that the GOP's death cult market fundamentalism and climate change denialism are 100% responsible for the crisis. And Senator Ted Cruz from Texas stepped up to show how you take charge of a disaster. Yeah, and solve some problems. How do you do it? Well, you pack up your family, you fly to Cancun. That's what you do. Yes. And yeah, he even left his family's poodle, Snowflake, inside their freezing home. Poor little Snowflake. Yeah, I guess the little Snowflake. So this is, I guess, Ted Cruz owning the libs? I don't know. Freaking scumbag. In more WTF Texas news, the mayor of Colorado City, Texas, Tim Boyd, topped even Ted Cruz. Yeah. When residents started posting to a community Facebook group in search of help and answers about power and water. Well, why? Because nobody was freaking giving them any answers. So they posted this Facebook group, and the mayor chimed in and said, and I quote, "No one owes you or your family anything. I'm sick and tired of people looking for a damn handout." Yeah. Tim Boyd is his name, everybody. Wow. Meanwhile, Texas-based reporters from the Texas Tribune and the Houston Chronicle are exposing decades of deregulation, free market fundamentalism, and climate change denialism that led directly to the current deadly crisis I was saying up above. Their reporting has been outstanding. And impeachment is over. The Republicans voted to support insurrection and their dear leader. But Nancy Pelosi's not letting go. After the Republicans gave Trump a free pass on sedition and inciting insurrection in the nation's capital, Pelosi announced plans for a 9/11-style commission to study the January 6th attack. In my mind, that's exactly what should be going on. Just saying. And in the latest move to divest from police and invest in communities movement, you know, defund the police is what it's all about. Divest from police, invest in communities, right? Los Angeles School Board cuts a third of its police force and reinvests that money in educating black students. Hey, now we're talking. According to the LA Times, quote, the unanimous decision comes after a year-long campaign by student activists and community members to reimagine the school police force, which they maintain disproportionately targets black and Latino children. So instead of targeting black and Latino children for police prosecution and abuse, we're going to target black and Latino children for education and uplift. How about that? How about that? A little closer to home, let the campaign for PA State Senate begin. Last night, Representative Malcolm Kenyatta announced that he will be running for the Democratic Party nomination for the U.S. Senate. You heard a bit of his clip from his announcement video there. Right out of the gate, he's got the endorsements from the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers, the American Federation of Teachers, and the Working Families Party. And earlier this month, Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman announced his campaign for the same office. So it will be a battle for the soul of progressivism in the Democratic Party in PA. It's going to be a freaking fascinating race, I'm telling you. And those are the only announcements I think we have out there right now, kind of like primary contenders. We shall see if we get anybody else in there. Yesterday was a deadline for judicial gerrymandering to make it onto the May primary ballot, which it did not. Progressives in Pennsylvania are celebrating this victory and continuing the fight to make sure it stays off the November ballot. And Harrisburg area community colleges are organizing a union. This past Saturday, faculty members held rallies on the Lancaster and Harrisburg campuses. Full-time and adjunct faculty have been working with PSEA for over a year on their campaign. HAC is the only community college in the Commonwealth without faculty union representation. And budget hearings are underway, and progressives are ramping up the pressure for a people's budget. We're going to be talking a lot about this in the next coming weeks. Today's last call, Tango Delta Nominal for NASA's Perseverance rover. Yes, the Perseverance rover safely landed on Mars yesterday at 3:55 p.m. And can I just say, that is the most amazing freaking thing where they said it was going to land at 3:55 p.m. That was the plan, and it landed at 3:55 p.m. on another planet, right? Can I just freaking say, like, that's science for you right there. That part of it blew me away. A whole bunch of other stuff too. Yes, I'm going to geek out a little bit today. Yes, I watched it live, celebrated with a can of Free Will's Under Dawn's Red Sun. Yes, that's a hazy pale ale with orange juice, hop with citra, bilba, and lemon drop. Comes in at a light 5.4 ABV because I had still shovel and things like that yesterday. Yes, Perseverance landed in Jezero Crater. It's going to be searching for signs of life. If you've seen any of the maps about where it's landed and how it landed, it's just absolutely fascinating. Its mission, one, to look for there's a kind of a river delta coming off this crater that at one time looks like water was flowing there, probably one of the best places. They could search for signs of ancient life on Mars. But it was incredibly difficult landing. So that's good. And then the second thing, for the first time, you're going to have powered flight. They're trying to fly this little helicopter called Ingenuity as kind of like a little kind of drone scout for the rover. That's going to be absolutely fascinating. It'll be the first time ever that they're going to try to unmanned, obviously, powered flight on another planet. Just blowing my mind. And it looks like NASA's acting chief, Steve Jurczyk, used yesterday's focus on Mars landing to bury the news that he broke on Wednesday that 2024 is no longer a realistic deadline to safely return to the moon. If you actually listened to the show kind of earlier on in the year, I was saying exactly that. That was one of the indications coming out of the Biden administration beginning, not because they don't want to do it, but because of the false promises of the Trump administration. But we'll get into that. And China is assembling its new Long March 5B heavy lift rocket in preparation of sending the first module to what will be China's first space station. China plans to construct a space station through 11 launches in 2021 and 2022. That's like crazy. We're going to have a second space station around the Earth. It's going to be a low Earth orbit, a whole bunch of stuff on that. And Sean is basking in his recent camera gear haul. Like, literally, he's, like, wearing his, like, camera bag underneath his hoodie right now. He's just got to get close to it. He said something about the need to bond. I don't know. Well, and Free Will Brewing is closed today, everybody, because of the weather, but they'll be back up in no time. I'm going to highlight a little bit about the Blackberry Raspberry Mash Sour Ale with Blackberry Raspberry Vanilla and Milk Sugar. It's absolutely fantastic. Did pick up some stuff last weekend, and I've been enjoying it slowly because it's been, you know, a busy week. Want to remind everybody, tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org or tune in to Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure to subscribe to the Rick Smith Show's daily podcast at iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts. And this past week on Out to Coop Live, we had our first ever open phones. It was fun, man. I'll tell you, it was great. Didn't have like a huge agenda. Had some stuff that was reading. Had some great listener comments come in through YouTube and on Podbean. I really liked it. So I think we're going to do some of that stuff in the future. You know, as we kind of expand the channel, as we expand the program, as we're getting more folks in. So that's great. Now, this coming Monday, I'm going to be welcoming Omar Ray to the show. Ray is a candidate for Lehigh County Commissioner, District 5. Ray is a community organizer from Upper Saucon Township. His platform includes distributing COVID vaccines equitably and efficiently, investing in affordable housing and families and seniors, supporting local schools, technical training programs, ending the cash bail system, which criminalizes poverty, and preserving farmlands and open spaces. He's also a pro-union guy. Yes, this year's Democratic Party primary will be held on May 18th. And so we'll be talking about his campaign. He just had his campaign launch last night, and we got him on the show on Monday. And on Wednesday, special Out to Coop on Wednesday, we've got a bonus show. I'll be talking to Jordan Hopkins. Hopkins is a 23-year-old writer, editor, independent journalist located in Philly. He's been investigating and exposing the growing numbers of right-wing extremist organizations in PA. And we'll be talking about his most recent article, A Party of Grifters, looking at how the Proud Boys and the QAnon influencers are leading the Patriot Party into the 2022 elections. Do they stand a chance in hell? Well, we'll ask Hopkins for his take. That's totally cool. And we've got more shows all lined up coming on there. I'm waiting for the final confirmations on a couple big announcements, which I'm very excited about. But, you know, I don't want to get ahead of myself, so I'll wait till I actually get that nailed down, and then we'll have some more folks coming up. I do have something already planned for the 1st, March 1st, but I don't want to overload you today, right? We're going to be talking about some the failures of fracking, basically, on March 1st. Oh, yes. So I also I rolled this out on Monday for Out to Coop Live, but I want to do it here again today, and I'm going to be part of our promo here. For all you gamers out there, I want to introduce you to the go-to place for all your gaming needs. Check out the Game Inn. That's Game Inn, I-N-N, located right on 309 in Quakertown. The Game Inn is a Quakertown-based, family-owned gaming store. It's also a Black-owned business, right? And you're in Black History Month, man. Get out there for your gaming needs. Not only are they friends of the show and awesome folks all around, they have almost every gaming product you can imagine, from retro N64s, Nintendo DSs, to PS4s and Switch. It also happens, their son happens to be one of my son's best friends, right? So they have a large variety of video games for all platforms, large collection of collectibles, action figures, Funko Pops, all that stuff. And you got kids, they get an A, they get a discount, right? Check them out on their Facebook page, follow them on Twitter, at the Game Inn with two N's at the end. Got a question about a game, looking for something hard to get, message them on Facebook, drop them an email at thegameinpa@gmail.com, or give them a call at 267-424-2535 and check them out at thegameinn.com. They're an awesome family, amazing folks. They have got a great store, and they will kind of work to kind of get you what you need. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. Support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today. Become a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress. We got rid of Trump. Now the hard work of building a progressive future begins. We're here for the fight, and we need you. Become a patron for the price of a good beer once a month. Help keep the media in the movement, the movement in the media. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. And if you're not ready to become a patron, just drop us a one-time donation at paypal.me/rcpress. And don't forget, head on over to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ragingchickenpress. Smash that subscribe button. Hit that little bell so you know every time that we go live. Sean, man, welcome, man. Welcome to quite another week, I gotta say.
Yeah, I you know, it's unfortunate I am not like in a warm area right now, you know, but you know, I did get to spend some time in the snow yesterday, and that was really fun.
Wait, it's unfortunate you're not in a warm area. What do you mean? Your apartment's freezing or something? Is that what you're saying?
No. I actually have power and heat right now, but I was wishing, you know, I was somewhere else, like in Cancun or.
I hear that's the go-to place these days.
Yeah, especially for insurrectionists looking to leave their home state in a natural disaster.
Yeah, looking and maybe hoping that they're going to run into Chris Christie on the beach, maybe?
No. Or Rush Limbaugh.
Rush Limbaugh, right. Some of the memes about that have been absolutely freaking awesome, I've got to say.
Yeah, yeah, the video, like the photos of yeah.
What a
fucking week. I mean, shame on like Ted Cruz for like taking the fucking media cycle away from Rush Limbaugh dying. Like, I mean, we were enjoying that. I mean, we were really enjoying that, and like now, yeah, Rush. I mean, Ted Cruz kind of topped that. Sorry, did you spill your coffee?
I almost spit it out, right? I thought you were going to say take it away from actually the real crisis in Texas instead of it's like whatever. Oh my God, pretty crazy, pretty crazy. Welcome everybody on YouTube too as well. Great to see you joining us. That's fantastic. Yes, indeed. But yeah, that I agree, man. I agree.
I mean, like, we were on a phone call when Rush Limbaugh died, and one of the people was like, how will the moderate wing of the Republican Party ever recover after this?
Yeah, that was, like, I thought that, like, was awesome. When you told me about that, I was like, yeah, that's it right there.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, fuck him. Good riddance. You know, has anyone checked in on Henry Kissinger yet? See how he's doing.
I don't know, man. But, you know, look, I don't want to celebrate anybody's death, and I'm not going to celebrate anybody's death, but I'm going to say it's like,
give me the fucking shovel. I'll throw the last thing of dirt on there.
Well, I'll help. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, like, I'm not saying, like, you know, whatever. I'm not going to, like, try to recognize, like, his contribution to whatever. No, that's the point. But if you think about, my point is this: is like if you think about the amount of people that we lost on the left in 2020, right? I'll just say I had this moment afterwards that felt like, okay, now she's on the other foot for a change. It's like, and I hate to say it like that, but I mean, you know, seriously, there were just some major losses in 2020, and you know, I'm haunted every day. I listen to the Majority Report, you know, when I'm, you know, with the loss of Michael Brooks, right? I mean, We lost Black Panther. I mean, I don't know. Just go on and on. But it's like,
but also, I mean, the contribution that, like, Limbaugh made to just completely destroy and make conservative politics into what it is today is like,
exactly.
I mean, he and Charles Koch,
yep,
or David Koch, you know, and a couple of other people are
the Koch,
like,
brothers, yep, together
are responsible for this. For our politics and where it is at today. Like, I mean, one of my friends on Twitter said, you know, you haven't really felt the effects of Rush Limbaugh until your stepdad called you a feminazi. like that's the type of discourse that this guy just went balls to the wall with every day for, like, years. So, I mean, fuck him. And it's pretty much all I got to say.
Yeah.
Did you see Sam Cedar's eulogy?
No.
Sam Cedar called into the Majority
Report.
Oh, no,
I did. Yeah, I thought you meant like there was something else released after that.
No.
Well, I think, here we are, like, we're color commentary on lefty media. So, I mean, Emma Vigeland was, you know, she's been in the show all week. Sam's on vacation. And I think she was like, her response was so perfect. Like, when the news came, she was like, it's a crime that Sam is not here. It's a crime. It was like her first response before, like, anything. He's like, it's a crime that Sam is not here. And so he kind of, like, magically appears, like, on the show, because, like, he calls in through his, like, secret line or whatever. So
yeah. So I mean,
but let me say this, I will say this, is, you know, you and I were talking about this in the show, and you already kind of alluded to this already, is that it really is true, is that if you want to kind of chart a trajectory of what got us to, you know, kind of white nationalist insurrectionists, right? it starts in many ways in Rush Limbaugh's studio.
The destruction of the fairness, is it the fairness doctrine?
Right, the FCC rulings, right? When Clinton, this is, you know, again, Bill Clinton, basically kind of changing.
And Ronald Reagan too, not what,
Ronald
renewing.
Reagan started, right? They did that, yeah. Bill Clinton kind of put it to bed. Right. And the FCC. So basically allowing kind of like multiple ownership of these things. And this is when we saw these kind of right wing, white wing. I guess they are white wing, aren't they? Organizations basically go up and buy up dying AM radio stations and low power radio stations, and then just saturate content from coast to coast. And, you know, they had a strategy of, you know, getting these you know, with the help of the religious right too, as well, basically buying up all these stations along major interstate corridors, and just to have coast to coast coverage of people like Rush Limbaugh. And Rush Limbaugh, you know, he cultivated right? The kind of like, you know, misogynistic, racist base that led us to where we are today. And, you know, I read a lot about the kind of right-wing media and that those kind of structures and kind of what got them to where they are. And
he's a starting point for a lot of it.
He is. I mean, you know, and, you know, the guy, you know, the guy had, you know, I said I wasn't going to eulogize him, but look, the guy had like an incredible talent of figuring out how to kind of use that medium to ramp up, you know, the worst of us. And like, you know, in one of the, like, you know, the biggest grifts ever too. So, I mean, this guy is like, he was, you know, for him, it's always been about the money. And then I think after a while, he just, you know, loved himself so much, whatever, that it, you know, after, even after the coke crap and then the drug problems and all the oxy stuff. But
and more important is Ted Cruz.
Yeah, let's get back to that. Yeah, see, I didn't want to even, I didn't care about, I mean, seriously, but then I'm like, you know, I've been thinking a lot about it. But so, okay, like first, before we get to Ted Cruz, let's talk about, I mean, because what, we put it in context. I mean, what is happening right now in Texas is
unprecedented.
And it is, yeah. It is, if you take, for example, like Milton Friedman's whole idea of like, you know, basically let's create a crisis, right? What Naomi Klein calls, you know, kind of disaster capitalism and the shock doctrine. This is essentially it. Like, except it's like, this is the result. This is on the other end of it. Right. What blows my mind is that there's even an attempt on the part of people like, you know, like Governor Abbott and things like this to kind of try to blame it on windmills. Right. As opposed to ever acknowledging it. But that shows you how far it's gone. Of course, like, you know, the right wing media is running crazy with that whole the Green New Deal came to Texas. That's what Tucker Carlson said. Right. Basically said, unbeknownst to most people, the Green New Deal came to Texas a decade ago. Look what happened, which is the biggest piece of shit lie. But people, the impact.
And Texas was warned about this a fucking decade or two ago.
It happened a decade ago. I didn't even know this, but like in 2011, the same freaking thing happened. Not as bad as this one, right? And it happened about a decade before that too as well. And then there was actually the FCC, right? Because what happened in Texas, right? If you haven't been following this stuff, I mean, like about, you know, the background stuff, Texas has its own energy grid, right? They purposely set up their own energy grid. And I thought that was a recent phenomenon. That goes back like a century, right? They set up their own energy grid that would only be within the
big middle finger to FDR.
Right. It would be their only like within the boundaries of Texas. And it doesn't cover the absolutely entire state, but the vast majority of the state, so that it wouldn't cross over state lines. So the federal government could not regulate them, the FEC, right? Oh, the FERC, I'm sorry, the FERC. So they did it purposely to avoid regulations. You learn that, and it's like, you've got to freaking be kidding me. You know, you've got to be freaking kidding me. And then, right, after the 2011 kind of crisis hit, when you had this like huge cold snap then, the FERC came in, basically said, hey, look, we know we can't regulate you, but we're going to produce a report on what happened here and give you the kind of, this is what you need to do. You need to protect yourself against this stuff. And they were just like, fuck you. Right. Nope. We're Texas. Right. We're going to be fine. Right. And no.
And it's amazing. It's, you know, amazing seeing how widespread this is. Like the photos and everything of it, or just like the map of Texas. You know, like, these people aren't used to the cold weather. They're not, the houses aren't built, aren't insulated.
Well, and they don't have the regulations that would be required to insulate them and protect them against this stuff either. Right.
Yeah. I mean, it amazes me. I wonder like what Elon Musk, Joe Rogan, and all these other fucking tech people moving to Texas because of like no taxes, no regulation are thinking. Like, this really
Elon
sets up
Musk
the point.
Came out, he fucking like railed on what happened in Texas, because he's like, I just moved my freaking factory to your damn state. Right?
Yeah, you know? I know, like, this is the and guess what, neglecting infrastructure and having no regulations turns out is bad for business. Who would have thought? Like, so my brother decided to opine on Texas on my Facebook feed. I don't know if people see how crazy my brother is, My brother is a like.
Well, 4. Yeah, Christopher on YouTube just basically put in and said, "Like, hey, everybody's parroting all that line about Green New Deal on the Green New Deal on Facebook right now." Like Sean's brother. So yes. Your brother has officially made it into our live stream. So
yes. So my brother, like the thing about my brother is he's a 4.0 math major in college. So it's not like an imbecile. He's not actually a dummy.
Yeah,
and he's a successful photographer. He runs his own photography business. And like he's one of these people who actually wants to move to Texas because of like the no taxes and no regulations and stuff like that. So I think it's like a really good textbook example of like why you shouldn't be moving to a state like this. But like I put up a post like pretty much goading him into it. It was like, I wonder what all you small government dipshits have to say about this. Like, and linked to like the Texas Tribune article, and he's coming out like tell me this is like a biased fucking media source. I'm like, Joe, all you do is like listen to conservative media. Like, and then he responded, well, Dan Crenshaw had a podcast. I'm just like, that's it. I'm done. Not like, I just like Joe. I was like, it was good talking to you.
Here's your room and go have a good day.
Yeah. And then my like friends jump in and you see, like, I also put the thing on Twitter. Like, I just like let the first rule of social media is you never respond to the trolls. You let your community handle that for you. It's like one of the Beth Becker said this years ago.
I was going to say, thank you, Beth Becker. That's what I was about to say that. Like all praise Beth Becker, right?
Like this is like 2013. Yeah. Like just let the community take care of the trolls.
Yep.
And you know, I let my Facebook friends take care of the trolls. And then my mom calls me the next day and she's like, Sean, you really like just like posting shit on Facebook to get your brother riled up, don't you? And I'm like, yeah, like you got me. It's like, do you want to see my Twitter account? What that's like? Like, I'm glad my parents and my brother aren't on Twitter because like the shit posting that goes on.
Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah. So
no kidding. But yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing, right? It's make that kind of discourse is just making its way like everywhere, right? I mean, in our neighborhood.
And that's fine when you do nothing but you're plugged into the conservative media echo chamber. And right. I told him, like, Joe, like, he said, it's like you're trying to be a journalist and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, Joe, like, all you post, all you cite for your arguments is stuff from the conservative media echo chamber. Like, not even like Wall Street Journal, but like National Review and like other shit like that, like to the right of the Wall Street Journal. I'm like at least like this stuff, like the Texas Tribune, which publicizes who their funders are.
Right.
They're like they're a publicly funded or nonprofit media venture, and Houston Chronicle are fucking source material.
Right.
Like it's actual legitimate non-biased source material, but because you're plugged into your, like your conservative echo chamber, truth has a liberal bias.
No, right, exactly. And like, you know, and what you see, you know, again, this shows you the power of this, that, you know, kind of national cable news in these circles too, as well as a way of kind of driving that kind of right wing infrastructure. Because it's like, you know, again, what you say about Texas Tribune and Houston Chronicle is that they've been covering this for years, right? I mean, so they've got, you know, they've had people on the ground investigating this stuff. They've been, I mean, obviously Texas is like a huge energy producing, you know, producing state, right? More than many countries. So that is part of what you cover and the investigative work that these folks have done.
Let's just say Dan Crenshaw's a district that he lives in. Like he likes to go after people like AOC for being hoity-toity, like progressives from like the liberal like coasts, pretty much, right. The elitist coast. Like dude, your per capita income is like 10 or 20 times of that as like AOC's, pretty much. Like it's fucking ridiculous to the amount of millionaires and billionaires that live in his district simply because of the oil and gas industry.
Right.
Like these are the people who drew your district, got you in office, got you a Harvard education, and set you on this career path.
Right. But meanwhile, they're not the ones who are impacted by the results, right? I mean, you're talking about millions of people are going on like a week with no reliable power and water, right? I mean, you're talking about
and nothing for a boil water advisory, too.
Well, it's incredible. I mean, Houston is the fourth largest city in this country, right? And they're huge sections of the city are dark, right? I mean, the power is not there. The water is not working. People are standing in lines, right, to get into a grocery store to get some bottles of water. And guess what? There's hardly any in there. There's no access to food. There's no access. I mean, yeah, you're going to boil your water? I mean, I've been watching some of these interviews of people, you know, from kind of local stations down there interviewing people, you know, what do you think about the boil water advisory? And they just freaking laugh. They're like, we don't have any power to boil the water. Like, what am I supposed to do? Right. You have people that are actually kind of firing up their backyard, like barbecue pits, right, to melt snow for water. This isn't, I mean, think about that. I mean, we just put a lander on Mars, and these people in Texas can't find a place to get water.
I mean, this is like third world country type shit.
What's that?
This is third world country type shit.
Totally.
Like, this is like, I mean, and the thing about this is like, we're choosing to do this. It's not like we don't have the resources. We're the richest fucking country in the world.
That's the point right there.
Like, yeah, we're the richest fucking country in the world. And we're choosing not to fund our infrastructure. And yeah, like, we can debate, like, we can absolutely acknowledge that this is a climate change issue. Right. But we also have to realize we don't have the infrastructure to deal with climate change because like this, right? Stuff like this.
Right.
But also, like, we cannot just upgrade our infrastructure, build out of the way and build ourselves out of climate change, which like some people think, well, if we only just update the infrastructure in this country, you know, it'll mitigate the impacts, but it's not like the fucking panacea to like ending this. Like, it's not going to fucking do anything. Like, yeah, we're going to have to fortify our infrastructure because this shit's just going to get worse.
Yep.
And like, and also like, what's going to happen is how many people are going to die from this? You know, A, COVID, right? And yep. B, like mass casualty events.
Yep.
Like, and this is going to be a cover up. We're never going to realize how many people died from this fucking cold weather.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
Right. It's going to be bad.
But hey, at least Ted Cruz.
Well, let me put this one more thing I want to say about this, about the climate change aspect of this. Emily Atkin, I don't know if you read any of her stuff or follow her. She does stuff. She's a climate reporter. She's got a fantastic newsletter. It's called Heated. And she had this one of the most recent posts, especially about what's going on here in terms of the weather, was called The Climate is Drunk Again. Right. And just want to read just a quick bit from here. So she said, remember when the term polar vortex went viral? Right, years ago, right? It was January 2014, and parts of the U.S. were colder than Mars. In Minnesota, temperatures reached negative 35 degrees, and in Texas, it was 21. Overall, more than a third of the country experienced below zero temperatures, and every single state dipped below freezing, even Hawaii. At least 21 people died from the cold in that one. Climate deniers, and this is the link we're about to say, climate deniers thought this was all pretty funny. Quote, Al Gore told me this wouldn't happen, said Senator Ted Cruz, right? A genius, that guy. On Drudge, the banner headline read, Global Warming Intensifies. Donald Trump, then just a reality show host on Twitter account, did not mince words. Quote, this is very expensive. Global warming bullshit has got to stop. And this was the day he truly became president, right? As she says. But, you know, she's giving some context here and kind of saying, you know, we're seeing a direct line. Right. I think there's
we had a vortex last in Harrisburg, like central in Pennsylvania, right. Like 3 or 4 years ago that.
Right. Like this is a direct result of, you know, the jet stream slowing down because of the warming of the Arctic. So therefore, instead of having a consistent jet stream that is kind of that it's relatively stable, it slows down and it dips and winds, therefore kind of drawing in this kind of like this crazy air. So, again, this right-wing media and the discourse that's out there is like, oh, global warming. Warming is in the name, so we're only going to focus. If it's cold, then therefore it's not warming, right? Again, trying to draw people away from actually the climate science to actually what's going on, because they're saying now, this is only the beginning of this kind of crap, right? And with an infrastructure that is not prepared to take on this kind of impact, right?
I mean, like, the Tribune report last night that, like, they were seconds or minutes away from the whole entire fucking frying, like, just... like destroyed, like towards the point where like people have been without power for months.
Exactly. Yep. I mean, like minutes, seriously. And you put that in the context, it's just absolutely crazy. So this is like, you know, there you go. This is the kind of level of the crisis that we're talking about, which is a direct result of policies that have been passed. And then you have one of the chief policy people who has been on video saying Congress should stay in and work and get the job done. That dude had to Cancun. Right?
So I woke up yesterday and I could not like believe. I couldn't believe he was that fucking stupid. I mean, I could, but like, I mean, like you're a pretty recognizable figure and you're on an airplane. You're pictured in an airport, like with your kids. Like, what the fuck did you think was going to happen?
Well, I wonder when, right? I mean, I wonder at what point, like, that thing started to click in for him. Like, maybe when he this sat wasn't down, such like, a good idea.
Man, why are people just turning around and taking my pictures with their phones?
Right. I mean, it's like, well, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. Got to get on the plane now, right?
And then he had, like, a fucking, like, suitcase. Like an actual fucking suitcase. I was only going to stay on there for a day or two. Someone's
well,
like,
he's changed his story now, right? I mean, now the story, like, they were going to stay for the weekend because, like, you know, his daughters really wanted to go away to someplace warm. And he was trying to be a good parent. Right. But then he realized this probably wasn't a good idea. So he should come back. So he's like, his story changed like several times until he finally settled.
He threw his fucking family under the bus. Yeah. Like, was just amazing. Yeah. And then like,
it was like, my daughters made me do it.
Yeah. And then this morning I went on Twitter and I saw the snowflake was trending. I'm like, what the fuck is this? And here he left his fucking poodle home named Snowflake. Like, you left your fucking dog at home in this like 10 degree weather at your, yes, your house. I mean, it's a fucking poodle. It won't be able to survive that.
Right. It's not like an Alaskan husky or something.
It's one way to get rid of the dog. Look, I mean, I hate poodles.
Well, so like I've got a cockapoo, right? Right. So I've got, and it's, so it's got some poodle in it. Right. And I'll tell you, he gets cold. He gets cold. He doesn't have the undercoat to go full on poodle with poor little Snowflake. That's like, you can see that dog like looking out the window, like
fucking shivering.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, it feels horrible. I mean, you should laugh at the poor dog, but because it's like, but it's like, this is just like, it's like laughter out of like, in, like, this is just,
why don't you just leave your fucking kids in the car? Like, during this, like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm running
to
the
store.
Well,
at the very least, you know, you do what Mitt Romney did and come strap the dog to the hood, right? Bring it to the airport with you or something. I don't know. I mean, these people, like, I mean, I swear to God, what they do is just crazy.
Yeah. But I mean, and then I think the, like, the best story from this week was the fucking, the mayor. Like, oh, just seeing that. Like,
can you believe that? I mean, just like, seriously.
Yes, I can, actually.
Well,
yes,
yeah,
I can.
I gotta stop saying that.
Yeah, like, I actually can, because this is what they've been saying all fucking pandemic.
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
Only the strong survive.
Yeah,
like,
only the strong survive. Yep, exactly. It's like, I can't.
And that is like their fucking like Ayn Randian like viewpoints. That right there, what he said is the crux,
yes,
of the Republican ideology.
Yep.
I mean, he just said it out loud. Probably shouldn't have, but like, I mean,
well,
that,
but no, but that just shows you the Republican. They say it out loud, not because it's like they're being bold. It's just because that's
who they are. It's what
and
they
that's
believe.
Everything that they're watching and reading and listening to is all saying the same thing.
It's what my brother believes.
Exactly. There you go.
Sorry,
Joe. No, but you're right. I definitely have to. I mean, you say no one owes your family anything. I'm sick and tired of people looking for a damn handout. I'm your mayor.
You're an elected.
Please vote for
official.
Me. Right. Please vote for me, all you pieces of shit. Right. I mean, this is basically what he's saying. I mean,
like, and it's like, we elected you to like fucking do something.
Yeah.
You're the mayor of a city. Yeah. Or like, you know, like, you know, Ben Shapiro's like whole entire like shit that like Ted Cruz really couldn't do anything anyway. Like, no, you're one of two people in your state that carry the title United States Senator.
Right.
Your job is pretty fucking important. Like, it's not just the performative thing for trying to cause an insurrection and leave and, you know, tampering with a jury fucking
right.
pool or like, you know, like giving Trump's lawyers all the questions and answers, you know, like you actually have to like deliver for your people. Well, it's look, not I mean, an ideological charade.
But this is actually
this is what they believe.
Well, but this is actually like politics 101, right? I mean, at the very, like, this is like not even brain surgery stuff. It's like you're elected as a senator and your state's got a disaster. The first thing you do is that you go back to Washington, D.C. if you're in Texas, right? And you make the case that there has to be an emergency declaration and that you need to make sure that they get funding down there and all the help that they need, right? Even though that makes you a huge hypocrite, nobody cares, right? That's what they want. But instead,
it's what they elected you to do.
Went the other way. Did you see the one meme about this when said Ted Cruz arrives in Cancun and they show the scene from Jaws where the guy's like, shark, shark, and everyone starts running out of the water and screaming? That was like my favorite.
I was seeing the memes of him like on the moon. I'm waiting for like somebody like in the Abbey Road of him.
Oh, like, God.
And also like his fucking can we talk about his attire? Like tight ass dad jeans and a shirt that's like one or two sizes too small.
Well, now we know why he got his new haircut. So because like he got that little trim there because he's all planning to go to Cancun. It's crazy. Anyways, we'll talk a couple things here to wrap up this section. But it's like, I mean, that was really what's going on there is unconscionable, right? It's absolutely unconscionable. And, you know, I know that they're like initially, right, you know, they're, you know, you follow on Twitter because people ship posts and stuff like that, being like, well, guess what, Texas, this is, you know, you got what's coming to you. That gave way pretty quickly to like the severity of the situation where people are in like a desperate situation. So if you can find ways to, you know, go down there, help out people, kind of spread the word, see what goes on, because people are going to, I mean, people, like actually people, not the freaking nut jobs that are kind of ruling stuff. But people are really hurting. So there. So meanwhile, you know, one of the things that just kind of went to the end of the of kind of our discussion cycle today was like, actually, if you remember, last weekend was the end of the impeachment thing. Right. And, you know, we learned a few things about, you know, kind of what's going on, you know,
in Philadelphia.
And there was, you know, kind of like, you know, a bunch of problems, and Trump's lawyers went out there and he couldn't figure things out.
I don't know why you're laughing.
And then whatever. And as expected, the, you know, Republicans basically voted to support their leader. And there you go.
Not surprising.
Well, it's not surprising. That's kind of what we knew was going on. And I know there.
I think I'm like surprised that like someone like Bill Cassidy fucking voted for. I mean, I'm not surprised Toomey or Romney voted because they've been saying that stuff for a while. Like, Toomey's on the way out the door and Romney's doing this because he hates Trump. But, like,
But Cassidy, look, I mean, I think Cassidy
just got elected.
Well, but I think what convinced Cassidy, I think, was the sheer incompetence of the lawyers, right? I think I actually believe that he was felt personally insulted by that. And he was like, no way. Right? There's just like, these people are charlatans. There's no way I'm going to do this.
You got a fucking injury lawyer.
It's what I'm saying. I mean, it's like, I just think he was like.
I mean, like, they did an excellent job just defiling the institution through this, too.
Oh, my God.
Like not just like the Republicans. We knew they weren't going to vote anyway, but they just like, just fucking gave them like the money shot. Like with this, and just gave like defiled the institution, like, and it was just like I couldn't believe.
I don't know why you're laughing.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
but you know, I guess there was a lot of there was a lot of folks that were, you know, there was that little kind of like hiccup at the end or whatever you want to call it about the calling of witnesses and everything, and people have been that really seemed to kind of catch hold in the media cycle, and you know, frankly. I said this to Sean beforehand, you know, I'm not one of these people that are going to be jumping on the Democratic, the Democrats for not calling witnesses and kind of saying this is another proof that they're not willing to fight and all this kind of nonsense I started seeing again, in part because I do believe Jamie Raskin. Like, I actually think he's 100% correct that there was no, that they got everybody that they were going to get for this vote.
But you know what we really need there, Kevin?
Tell me.
A stronger Republican Party.
Oh Jesus Christ. I didn't put that in there. Can I just say something about this? I was so mad. I literally got up and had to leave the room.
You started tweeting.
I did. I was so pissed off when I saw like the impeachment managers came up afterwards and they gave this press conference, right? So you had Jamie Raskin, right, and got all the impeachment managers out there. And look, and they were clearly pissed off. They were mad. They were kind of like, they knew that, look, they did what they proved everything they needed to prove. And they were just disgusted at what the Republicans did, right? And that was coming through. And then in comes uninvited Nancy Pelosi, right, to the podium, right, and disrupts this thing. And because, right, she was blamed, right? Basically, they said, like, Nancy Pelosi was the reason why they screwed it up or they delayed it. This was because in response to Mitch McConnell. Because of that, because she was personally upset, she got in there and went on this kind of like this rambling beginning of a kind of like, and then he said, and then he can't believe nobody cares about that outside of Washington, D.C. And if she wanted to do this, she's a speaker of the freaking house. She could have held her own damn press conference and not disrupt that. Right. So I was so mad about that, because I think like that right there shows you that, you know, your leadership has broken down. Your ability to actually lead the caucus, right? Whatever people claim about her thing, that now it's all just your personal little kind of like, you know, like that made me so mad, right? But on the flip side of it,
I had to get that in.
You probably knew how you were going to freaking send me off a cliff on that one. It's like, exactly. I was livid about that, because I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? This said, I'm watching this, and this says to everybody who was watching that the Democrats don't have their shit together, and that Nancy Pelosi is going to make it all about her. It just reconfirmed every lie people tell about her, right? And the people, look, she is not very popular, right? In the polls, right? And this just kind of like helped fan the flames of that narrative, and it was such a deaf ear to what the politics of that moment required. Having said that. I'm going to give her some kudos at the same time for basically saying that she's going to announce his plans for a 9/11 style commission to investigate what happened on the Capitol. I'm of the mind is like, they did a freaking amazing job. The House managers did an amazing job laying out that case. It was impactful. It took me back several times as somebody who's been following the news pretty closely. And then they said, okay, we got as many Republicans as we're going to get. And if you haven't been paying attention to who the Republican Party is for the past 10 years, right, then maybe you thought some kind of fantasy would happen and that actually, you know, the fever would break, as Obama would say. Wasn't going to happen. And so they went in there. I think they fumbled the media handling of the witnesses thing. And that's what the hubbub was all about, because it played well in the media, that controversy, right? But no. The commission is what's essential to kind of actually kind of like ferret out what the hell actually happened there. And I hope heads are going to roll for that stuff, figuratively speaking, please.
Yes, we need a truth and reconciliation commission. I think that the House managers put together a really good first opening salvo for that commission with the story that they told. But like, we need to have committee hearings on not just the attack, but the big lie that Trump spent.
Yes.
And like the whole entire, you know, I'm not going to talk about this probably till next week, but you know, we need to start also talking about how the whole entire Republican Party infrastructure, from the national party down to the state parties, down to the county,
yes,
and local parties, were all responsible for this.
100%.
It's not just the national or state party that did this. These fans were flamed by these county and state parties and like the local parties. And we saw this happening unfolding weeks ahead of this January 6th event. You know, we're going to be drilling down more into this in the coming weeks, but you know, it's not just the state. It's not just the national party that's responsible for this. This wasn't a concerted effort by the whole entire Republican Party infrastructure to overthrow an election and attack our democracy. And I mean, that's pretty much it.
Look, I just have one thing that I'm going to hope, and you know, I'll write my representatives about this and everything like this, that, you know, if they're going to do this 9/11 like commission, right? Absolutely. They should do it. I just think that they should do it
in Philadelphia.
Sorry, I couldn't help myself. Take a serious moment and squash it. You gotta love it. But yeah, so I think that's 100%, Sean. I think that's what's got to happen. So, anything else you want to throw in the kind of the national score?
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, cool. Definitely check out. You'll see it in the show notes. Kind of what they're doing down there in Los Angeles School District by kind of shifting over the funds. You want really concrete examples of when, you know, people talk in short terms about defunding the police. Really, you're talking about divestment, kind of from police departments and policing, and reinvestment in communities. That's a really concrete, good example of what's going on, and it is the result of student activists, of community activists, who kind of made that happen. Right. So definitely check that out. The links are here. Want to remind you, like, if you're listening to the show now, watching us on YouTube, make sure you hit that subscribe button. Make sure you ring that bell so you know every time that we go live. And once again, to remind everybody that on Monday, an Out to Coop Live, I will be welcoming Omar Ray to the show. Omar Ray is a candidate for Lehigh County Commissioner in District 5. He's a progressive community organizer running a cool campaign, just had his launch show last night, which is fantastic. And then on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, we'll be streaming live to YouTube on this one. We're not going to be doing this on Out to Coop Live, but we're streaming live to YouTube. I'm going to be talking to Jordan Hopkins, right, about his work exposing kind of right-wing extremists in Pennsylvania and kind of their plans for going forward. So definitely tune in, make sure you hit that subscribe button, ring that bell to make sure you know when we're going live. And then right now I can tell you can help support this show by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month. $5 a month to help us expand this network, everybody. All right, we'll be back right after this quick break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1910. That was the day streetcar workers in Philadelphia walked off the job just as garment workers were ending their victorious strike. The walkout soon turned into a general strike. The Amalgamated Association of Street and Electrical Railway Employees Local 477 had been trying to negotiate fewer hours, higher wages, and union recognition for almost a year. Philadelphia Rapid Transit broke off negotiations in mid-February, fired 173 union members, and imported scab replacements from New York City. The Amalgamated Association of Street and Electric Railway Employees called workers out. Strikers pulled apart buildings under construction and used the materials to block tracks and build strike shelters. Many trolley cars were badly damaged when the Philadelphia Rapid Transit attempted to resume service. Scab drivers fared as badly as the trains they attempted to run. The mayor called for citizens to serve police duty after strikers loaded dynamite onto tracks in Germantown. The union offered up its members to preserve order, but the mayor refused. Then the Philadelphia Rapid Transit brought in an additional 600 scabs and National Guardsmen to protect them. Area workers were infuriated at this latest move, as were small businesses and religious groups. On March 5th, the Central Federated Union called a general strike. More than 75,000 workers stayed off the job to protest anti-worker assaults. Though the general strike was called off at the end of March, transit workers stayed out until April 19th. They won wage increases, rehiring of strikers, and mediation for the initial 173 fired workers. They could not secure exclusive union recognition, but the strike solidified solidarity among area workers and demonstrated the capacity of labor to organize work actions across industrial lines.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. Yes, we are looking at a lot of stuff, cool stuff, interesting stuff happened in Pennsylvania this week. You heard this in the intro today, Representative Malcolm Kenyatta, who we just so happens we have played a lot of his stuff in our intros and things because he's been really taking people to task, right? Republicans to task and bringing the fight to the floor. And kind of his interviews, he's been kind of a really strong voice. Well, he just announced that he's going to be running for the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate in this race. And as we know, that kind of John Fetterman was kind of right out of the gates. He announced his candidacy kind of really early on. And so now we see that we're going to have, I think, a real debate, right? A real debate that's going to be kind of, I think, really good campaigning that's going to go on to find out, you know, the future of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party. I really do think that, as I said in the kind of intro, the kind of like the soul of the kind of Pennsylvania Democratic Party, the progressive wing of it, at least, is going to kind of is on this ballot, or on at least in this campaign, or in the primary. And now, having said that, I want to acknowledge the fact that I've seen people say this, that, you know, that, well, neither one of them is kind of like, you know, as left as I am or something like this. You know, like, I'm not saying that, right? And I'm not, I would say that a lot of the progressives that we've already elected to the state house and the state senate kind of might even be more left than we see for these candidates. But so I recognize that, right? So I'm not trying to say that this is the limits of this, but I'm saying that these are two candidates who are both kind of branding themselves as progressive and have been kind of working on these lines, have different kinds of records, and we're going to see, and are appealing to, I think, somewhat different constituencies. So we're going to see what happens in Pennsylvania politics in this nomination.
So, you know, I want to start this off, you know, talking about the overview of this primary and like the history of previous primaries for the U.S. Senate seat.
Yeah,
you know, like we're gonna have an actual debate.
Yes.
About progressive politics in Pennsylvania.
Exactly. This is what this primary. I'm excited about.
Probably
this.
The first time ever. You know, Bob Casey was given his seat years ago, like 2006, I believe. But like, you know, you've had someone like Chuck Panaccio, who we've known from
years,
the Keystone Progress Summit, seeing him every year run against Casey. But like, he was only running against Casey as someone on the ballot. He's a really great progressive principal, you know, but like never had support or institutional backing and always had the party undermining him. Same thing with Sestak. You know, I wouldn't even say Sestak is a progressive, but right. like the party worked to rat fuck Sestak after he beat their ordained candidate, Arlen Specter, in 2010. One of the most devastating political ads ever was Sestak basically talking about like Specter saying switch parties get reelected. And that's pretty much what the fuck he was doing. You know, you can debate the validity of that ad and the quote that Specter was saying, but like at the time, but like that's why Specter became a Democrat.
I don't think anybody who pays any attention to politics doubted that.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it was like out in the open. I mean, this was not something that like Sestak was doing. He was just basically acknowledging that, and instead of saying it in whispers in the back rooms, just saying it publicly.
Yeah, and I remember watching that ad. I specifically voted in that primary. The first time I ever voted in the primary was to vote for Sestak because of that fucking bullshit with Specter. You know, being a Republican, supporting Bush that whole entire time. Economy is collapsing. It was still in free fall in 2010. You know, and then, okay, so going forward, you know, the Democratic Party had Sestak running again, and they decided to dump millions of dollars into a horrible candidate in Katie McGiving. I voted for Sestak. I think I voted for Fetterman that time, but Sestak would have been leagues ahead of McGinney as a representative, who actually, like, fucking got it. Where, like, yeah, McGinney might have had a really good track record and, you know, resume in scare quotes.
Right.
But, like, she was just a horrible person that could not connect. Not horrible, like.
Not personally. As a politician, as a candidate.
Yeah.
Yes.
She was part of, like, the liberal centrist intelligentsia in D.C. who, you know, they were trying to give a Senate seat to.
Well, and you could tell, like you know, here's a perfect example, right, where when
– I mean, she was like a robot pretty much.
Well, it's just like, look, I just don't think she was a good campaigner, right? I don't think she was a good campaigner. And, like, you know, we could talk about
– She was also a horrible person to work under when she was heading the DEP. Like, stories of her, like, if you didn't get back to her email within 30 minutes, you're fired.
Yes.
Like, that type of, like right. – Toxic work environment.
But one of the things that I wanted to point out there with her candidacy, I mean, we saw her kind of several times, right? I mean, got different campaigns and got a debate at the PA Progressive Summit, and look, she came out of that you know, like you said, that kind of DC think tank kind of like DNC kind of like milieu. She had like it was a shame about her right? Just in terms of, this is very superficial, and I apologize for that. Like, I'm not even talking about policy at this point. Is that, but she had, I think, a really good backstory, right? I mean, I think that, you know, coming up from working class roots and coming up from that background and all this, it was like, that's a real story and an asset, right? And it could have been a point of connection. But it had gone through this kind of consultant speak, right, to the point where when she was telling even that story and kind of like, you know, engaged in these debates, it just came off as just like just nonsense. It came off as just like a PR like blitz. And it was clear. And it was clear that she was going to go nowhere. And yet the DNC threw freaking tons of money at her.
No, it wasn't DNC. It was the DSCC. It was Chuck Schumer and all that did that. Now we're here 2022. We're in still 2021, 15 months out of the primary. So also why I think we're seeing this now and not, I think we're also seeing like these people announcing, like Malcolm and Fetterman announcing, specifically because we didn't have a PA society this year. You know, say whatever you want about the PA society. I think it's bullshit. But like, these are usually the things that people go to. And this year was, you know, like previous PA society would have been the time, the 2020 PA society in December that was canceled would have been the time that like these rumblings start coming forward, even on the Republican side and the Democratic side. And this is where like these campaigns unofficially start. And I think we're seeing more of this because of the PA society not existing this year and the way the dynamics are changing. That's all I got to say the opening. I like the fact Malcolm is running. I gave to Malcolm's campaign last night. You know, he is someone who I've got to know a lot over the past several months in Harrisburg. You know, he's someone who also pissed me off in the primary by shitposting on Sanders and stuff like that.
Yep.
But like, he is someone who I've gotten to know through that, past the, all that here in Harrisburg. And in my opinion, I think he's the real deal. You know, it's going to be tough for him to win this primary, but he's the real deal with, you know, some of these people. Like, he's up there with Sarah Summer, Feeler, Nikhil, Rick, like in that like realm of new progressives. They're coming to legislature, and he's in it to win it. Like, this isn't about him raising his profile.
Oh no,
he's 100% in this to win it.
But look, I mean, one of the things that you got to give him a ton of credit for, right? I know, shout out to Shayna once again. I mean, you know, here that, you know, she came out and said like, yeah, he was there for me, and you know, he showed up for people.
Yeah, he showed up for people.
He showed up for people. He showed up like in kind of the organizing. He showed up for races that weren't the popular races, right? The ones that were kind of endorsed and kind of like, you know, easy to come to. He supported kind of movement oriented like candidates. And look, I mean, hats off to that, right? I mean, that's going to be the real measure. In my mind,
he understands his use of the platform.
Yes.
How he uses his platform. You know, like he hasn't been tweeting about marijuana the whole entire time over the past 9 months, which, you know, like, I get it. That's one of Fetterman's main sticking points. But like, there is more to progressive politics than just legalizing marijuana in Pennsylvania. Like, you know, like, and Malcolm has used his platform to lift up the messages of the stuff that's happening right now in the Philadelphia school district, you know, with the toxic buildings, with this like failed, flawed reopening plans, you know, with the sending teachers back into schools. And we're seeing that like with, you know, like with the endorsements that came out.
Yeah.
You know, and we're going to see a breakdown between what type of progressive movement that we're going to have. Like, Malcolm and the people that are endorsing Malcolm, heavily centered in the urban areas, while like Fetterman's going to go for that white rural suburban vote.
Right. And I think we should be clear, though, is like this is why, you know, we were talking before the show today about the kind of constituencies that we're going to see kind of at play here in this primary. You know, what Malcolm Kenyatta is basically, is that he connected up with the kind of emerging like majority, right? I mean, you talked about these, you know, drawing from the energy from the, like, the future of Pennsylvania. He says this in his ad, right? I mean, he actually says this in his ad. And I do think that's true. What Fetterman is kind of looking at, he's looking at a different kind of ethos, a different kind of, you know, background of like what Pennsylvania is. And, you know, again, we got to acknowledge the fact, like, this is what I think is going to be really important about this campaign. The one thing that Fetterman has been very good about raising a profile. We can debate whether how he's come through on this and how progressive it is. But the one thing, by going to communities that have been kind of going by the wayside and falling apart, right, in these kind of former industrial areas that were left behind by extractivism, right, were left behind by the kind of economic kind of turn and all this stuff, raising that profile is kind of is really important, I think, in this state. And having said that, he's not been the best when it comes to, you know, when it comes to the actual fracking stuff, right?
I mean, like, he's waffled on shutting down Berks. Like, he's waffled on fracking and the environment.
Right. And I do think that is going to be where I think Fetterman, and look, I've told you this before. I have friends like nationwide, right, who've seen interviews with Fetterman and are kind of like all in with Fetterman, right, and kind of donating to his campaign from across the country. Right. But it's because of the image. Right. I think what's going to happen here, this is where the rubber is going to hit the road in the campaign, is that it's going to be the stuff that you just pointed out. Right. It's like, it's one thing to get that first round of say, this is what we're going to do. But when you start kind of putting pressure on it, where's Fetterman going to come down? Right. Where's Kenyatta going to come down? And right. Are the constituencies there for those two different, you know, two different kind of groups?
And also, I think
it's going to be, I really do think this is a watershed period for progressive politics in the state.
Yeah. I mean, like, you look at how both Fetterman and Malcolm have been on MSNBC over the past several months in different news outlets. Like, Fetterman would go out there attacking the Republicans and using, like, being funny about it, like, haha. Like, you know, Republicans are just simping for Trump the whole entire time. He must have said simping like 1,000 times, which I thought was funny, hilarious, on point. But, like, Malcolm is also going on there and talking about the issues that are affecting Pennsylvania, about judicial gerrymandering. And, you know, like, he was on MSNBC twice this weekend and mentioned the judicial gerrymandering and how that has stopped. Like, I mean, the video clips of Malcolm over the past several months of him speaking and attacking Republicans for disenfranchising voters. Like, you know, Malcolm was one of the handful of, like, Democrats that got what was going on with the Republicans and their push to steal this election.
Exactly.
Like, you know, from, like, you know, and we're calling it out from the screaming about it from the hilltops. You know, him and Kevin Boyle and a handful of others saw this coming, and, like, they were screaming about it months ahead of time.
Yep. Well, I mean, this is why, you know, this is why we've had so many sound drops from Malcolm Kenyatta on this show, right? Because he's been calling out exactly what needs to be called out. In a very public way, but not necessarily just geared towards the cameras, right? I mean, a lot of, you know, when I'm pulling sound drops from Kenyatta's stuff, it's been coming from, like,
the Senate floor,
hearings or the Senate floor or things like
the
this.
The House floor.
I'm sorry, yeah, the House floor.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, right? But it's been from the normal workings of government, not from, say, a media campaign about something in particular. So that's, you know, that's really exciting. I got to say that. And, you know, like I said, our comments are going crazy on YouTube right now, right? Kind of discussing about this. And I think that's indicative of what's going on, right? You know, we've got Brian saying, you know, I think Malcolm is probably the best positioned candidate to get grassroots support, right? We've got Shannon saying,
I mean, we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks now. Or go ahead. But
yeah, I'll, no, it says that a lot of us who he supported are going to be much more excited to support him than someone with a bigger platform who did Bupke in 2020 for candidates, just saying, right? I mean, I do think that matters, right? And Kenyatta, right? Christopher writes in, Kenyatta was at Kutztown last week, right? Giving the keynote there. And this stuff matters.
I was really surprised last night to see, you know, I'm really good friends with Laura Shadle, who's from Center County. She's running for re-election with her position and is running the jury.
I just saw her posting about him, right? I mean, she was just
she was in the video, the Malcolm's launch video. But we were talking, like, he's going to these places as well. Like, he's not, like, just neglecting, you know, like, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and the progressive urban areas and that's it. Like, you know, I think you saw in his campaign video where, you know, he's showing up to the forgotten places of Pennsylvania as well.
No, no, that's absolutely true. And I think, like, that's what the, you know, the kind of initial, like, hot takes by people who are kind of casual observers of this stuff and just kind of look at Pennsylvania, break it down into these, like, two general categories of, like, urban rural stuff are missing where he's been, like, during the last round of campaigns and where kind of how he's been invested in this. And I'd say they're also missing on the flip side of this is that where Fetterman has kind of been out talking about, you know, particular kinds of policy and things like that, but have not necessarily shown the same kind of support for those candidates who are kind of running more grassroots campaigns. So, I mean, that is going to be at play here without a doubt. But yeah, I don't think we should underestimate this too as well, because I do think that, you know, that Fetterman's going to be bringing in some money, like some national money from people who kind of have this image of Pennsylvania in their heads and they're going to want a different kind of candidate. I do think that there's going to be sniping left over from the, you know, the 2016 election. And I do think that there's going to be a lot of charged up organizers on the ground who are going to be in Kenyatta's camp because he's been showing up for them. So a lot is going to be in play, and we're talking about this is not during a presidential election, right? So we're also talking about turnout being an absolutely critical part of this campaign, which Democrats have not necessarily had a good track record on. But I think that is going to change this time around, is what we've seen the dynamics changing.
And I know it's not in our show notes, but there's a piece by Holly Otterbein in today's Politico about the shit show, the primary that's going to be happening in the Republican side. I haven't read it yet, but I've seen some of the back and forth comments. So
yeah,
definitely worth looking at. I mean, I will say this. I mean, I'm, you know, positioned where I'm at. Like, it's 2022. Like, I'm already excited about 2022. Like, yeah, not just from the shit show that's going to be happening on the Republican side, but, like, we're going to have an actual, like, progressives are going to be flexing their muscles this year, next year, like, on a statewide level. Like, and I think, like, you know, I was talking to my friends who a couple of them are Republican lobbyists, you know, after the election, they acknowledged, like, holy shit, the progressive movement in this state is fucking organized. And they didn't realize that until after the election. Like, and it's, yeah, like, my friends who are who are conservative Republican lobbyists, who I can talk to and, like, have fun with. Like, there's a couple of them in Harrisburg. Not a lot, but just a handful. But, like, they were, like, they're legitimately shocked at how well organized the progressive movement was, especially when it came out to educating people about the mail-in ballots, getting them to chase down their ballots, making sure, like, people return their ballots. Okay, you're fucking up the mail system. Return your butt to the drop boxes. Mm-hmm. Like, and to make sure people handed their ballots in or people voted and knew what to do. So, yeah. I mean, and the fight we're having right now against the judicial gerrymandering, it's probably good, you know, like, that is not going to be on the May primary ballot.
Right. That's huge, which is enormous. Yeah. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah. Like, the work that Kadita and We the People are doing has been tremendous. We were on our call before this, and they got, like, into the New York Times this week, front page of the New York Times, about the judicial gerrymandering fight that's happening in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
The organizing that's going on around that. Again, Malcolm Kenyatta talked about judicial gerrymandering on MSNBC twice this week. Before announcing, he was talking about judicial gerrymandering and what they're doing. Like, you know, like, this is becoming a national issue and people are paying attention, and it's putting enough pressure on the Republicans where, you know, like, Russ Diamond is the person leading this charge, lead COVID denier, lead insurrectionist in the House, like, you know, anti-masker. Is this who you want the face of your Republican Party to be if you're Jake Corman and you're planning on running for governor? Is this who you want to sink your political career if you try to run for governor in 2022?
Yeah. I don't know, man. We're going to see. I mean, it's like, and I think that, you know, your point there about, we've talked about this before, about how, you know, very often when you're talking about the national media, kind of skipping over Pennsylvania for a lot of some of this war stuff. But I think that what we saw because of, you know, the PA Republicans' own work, like their own insanity, their own kind of like, you know, support of the insurrectionists, all that kind of stuff has now got people's focus on this stuff. So, and Kenyatta coming out basically and keep on hammering on this stuff at the nationally is also, I think, help reinforcing the, you know, the kind of light being shown on this, which is great.
So I'm actually, I'm going to bring up Roxbury again. Roxbury, he has a deck on State Street. Like
Roxbury's deck.
An actual moving deck on State Street.
A moving deck. It's got a motor.
Yeah. It's like a little boat propeller. But he is getting his apartments. He has a couple of apartments that are open. And like he is refurbishing them. He's turning the basement of his building into offices for like consultants or media people who are coming to Harrisburg. He's turning the upstairs unit into a second floor unit into an Airbnb for journalists. And like literally his sister is already making connections to NBC Universal to see if they'd be interested in just running that place out. Like he's turning into like a fucking high-end apartment because he sees where it's going. Like he's been saying this for years, like since I've been in Harrisburg, and like that Pennsylvania is the most important state and State Street's the most important street in the country. Like, and like, you know, I always kind of thought he was just like overblowing that, but no, not until you got to
spend a lot of time on that deck.
But no, like the past couple election cycles and being able to see that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, no, we are the most important state. There might be $1 billion spent on the Senate race coming up. All that money coming into Pennsylvania, like there may be $1 billion spent on the governor's race. You know, astronomical amounts of money are going to be spent in Pennsylvania. I mean, like the election season is a multi-billion-dollar industry in the state, and people don't talk about it, but it is.
Yep. There we go. So, lots of stuff coming on. I mean, this is going to be quite a season. I mean, all the way around. Very excited. Just want to give a shout out to the folks at Harrisburg Area Community Colleges. Like I said, they are organizing union. They've been at this for over a year. They're kind of starting to do, say, these public rallies. This past Saturday, faculty members held rallies in both Lancaster and Harrisburg campuses. This is basically be full-time and adjunct faculty, right? And they are literally the only community college faculty in the Commonwealth that do not already have union representation. All the more reason to kind of send out your support to the folks. You can kind of check out the article in the link in the show notes today. Get with those folks if you're in kind of in the Harrisburg area, if you're in kind of Lancaster area, connect up with those folks and show the solidarity. They're going to need your support. We need them to get that kind of that union contract or union recognition and then get that union contract. So very, very cool. Last thing I got here is that, you know, we mentioned this last week that we've got budget hearings that are kind of underway. There's a lot of stuff that's coming out here. I'm going to be focusing a little bit on what's going on in Pashi kind of in the coming weeks. And the launch last week of the people's budget, right, where we saw 28 kind of representative senators, state senators sign on to this people's budget as a kind of, this is what we're going to be pushing. They're doing that kind of organizing. We're going to see more of this in the coming weeks. We're going to be talking about that on this show. We're going to talk about that on Out to Coop Live with some of our guests. And we want to kind of get behind the support here too as well. Now, remember, that may sound familiar because, you know, this whole notion of the people's budget, there's been activists who've been working on this for years. And they have rallies in the state capitol. They've been pushing for a people's budget. What makes this year different, right, is that you actually have a strong core of people going on the record, politicians going on the record, working in conjunction with people in the streets, right, to get behind this people's budget process, which is freaking amazing.
I think there's one last thing like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm I'll say it anyway. Budget and Policy Center is going to be having their yearly budget summit for the wonks out there.
Is it next week or 2 weeks?
No, I think it's in a couple weeks. And Governor Wolf will be the keynote speaker for that this year. So
that's
sign
good.
Up.
Yeah.
Sign up if you can.
Here, let me pull the details for a minute. We didn't drop that in without letting people know when the hell it is, Sean. That's great.
We the People and the Budget and Policy Center have been doing great work. They're all under the same shop. And yeah, I mean, like, again, more the progressive infrastructure at work here.
Yeah, let me see if I can. Don't worry, just hold on. I'm just going to look for it. Right? If you don't, mind, I'm just going to go look for that thing that you brought up, and I just want to kind of like show other people that this thing is going on. But don't worry, I got it.
It's kind of like a spur of the moment thing.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, no duh, as I used to say. We're gonna have to see if I can try to get on the show notes. I went to their events page and it's not posted there, but I do have a email about it someplace. But yeah, they are taking registrations now, which would be awesome. If Sean could track it down kind of on our break, then we'll talk about it on the other side of the break. Just a couple quick things this is comments from YouTube. We were talking about the Senate race too as well, saying that there's expectation there's going to be a lot of other people that are at least maybe not a lot, but there's going to be several other people that are planning on getting into the race. A name such as, was it Chrissy Houlihan? Right. Yes. As a possibility, as Connor Lamb, as a possibility. And Brian kind of was basically saying, I'm surprised that we haven't heard, say, Madeline Dean is one of the potential candidates coming up. So I'm just curious your take on that.
So I like Madeline Dean. My family has known her for years. My parents are faculty members at LaSalle University. I've gotten to know her while she was in the House. She's an amazing person. I frankly don't know if she wants to run for U.S. Senate. Mm-hmm. I think people are just hyping her name because of how well she did last week with the hearings.
Right.
But I think that she, I mean, you look at her like do you, for her age, do you want to engage in that type of campaign for U.S. Senate? Like, I mean, no, I don't want to be like ageist or sexist or anything like that, but like family, grandkids, like,
no, I just don't like, through, I would like, just even put it like this. I haven't heard it. I just look at it like this. I haven't heard anything from her saying that, that this is what she's interested in doing. I mean, frankly, she is doing a freaking bang up job in what she's doing right now.
And she's on the House Senate, or no, she's on the House Judiciary Committee.
Yeah.
A very powerful position. Do you want to run the risk of losing the power that you have being on influential committees in Congress at this point as a House member in the majority versus, putting together a Senate run, which is a lot harder than what her district is. Like, she's in a super safe district. She's going to have to raise a ton of money to do that, put together a statewide campaign. Like, Houlihan and Connor Lamb are going to be the two candidates that the DSCC and Chuck Schumer are probably going to get, one of them are going to get behind. So we'll see. But like,
I
think Houlihan's the best out of the two of them.
Yeah. Connor Lamb, I just can't.
Like, Connor Lamb is maybe like 20 years ago, Connor Lamb could make a run for U.S. Senate. Like, he's a vestige of the dying Western Pennsylvania Democratic Party that still think that they're center of Pennsylvania politics.
Yeah.
Like, that's just, they're not.
It's, right. And tries to cloak himself in like a Beto O'Rourke populism. Right. I mean, that's what kind of like, you take those two things together, the dying kind of like conservative Democrat kind of Western Pennsylvania stuff, like pretending to be kind of the young and fresh when you're really just freaking a rotting shell. Sorry. That shouldn't be so bad. I just can't deal with it. But anyway, so good stuff. So we'll see what happens, who's going to throw their hat in. I do think that it's going to get more interesting, especially since we do not have yet the candidate from the kind of the Democratic Party establishment, which we can count on the fact that that's going to happen. Who that's going to be, we shall see, I'm sure, because they got to make the announcements pretty soon. So we shall see. Well, they don't. Yeah,
I mean, I've heard Kevin Boyle's name get thrown out there. Not Kevin Boyle, Brendan Boyle.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we'll see. I mean, like, we'll see.
Yeah, we shall see.
All right, I actually found.
Well, go ahead.
Just want to say, I found the budget summit.
Okay, please let everybody
registration.
Know.
So, you know.
Can you put it in the link in the show notes so that Lisa did there? And do you have the dates? What are the dates?
Registration.
Did you get that far in?
I'm not that far in.
All right, we'll come back to it after the break. Please put it in the show notes. It's like, oh, I found the link. Great. Got anything usable with that? Oh, no, I didn't get that far. just give you a hard time. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be back right after this quick break with this week's Let's Call. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Back to Raging Chicken's Out to Cue podcast. It's our last call. We talk space news. We talk beer news. Everything else is kind of going on in our lives and things. And here we go. I'm here once again with Sean Kitchen. And I got to get right to it. Get to the boring of Sean Kitchen time with the freaking space news. Huge shit this week. The NASA's Perseverance rover just landed on Mars yesterday. I was watching the NASA stream all day long. I completely geeked out. When I was teaching my classes, I had I downloaded the NASA's media kit. So I got all their B-roll film, right? So I had downloaded the B-roll and had the B-roll running as my Zoom background during my classes and stuff yesterday. It was great. So I just loved watching it. There's so much to talk about here. I mean, you know, first of all, one of the things I did not say in the intro, but this was a project, right? That was, I mean, both the Perseverance rover, right, and the Ingenuity, the helicopter that's up there with her, projects led by women, projects led by women of color, right? Kind of incredibly diverse teams that you have up there. I mean, just seeing that on the screen, and believe me, having my daughter sitting there watching with me, that is, I can't tell you how great that was, and how young those folks were. I mean, yeah, they're the kind of like, you know, the old white dudes, you know, with the kind of pocket protector and things like that. There were a few of those. But the people in the control room at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory out in California, right, where the, they're kind of where everything was kind of controlled from, mission control, was, you saw a lot of young folks that are working on this stuff. And it was really, really cool to see that. And then I got to say, I'm just kind of just blown away. Every time, this is, I think, part of my own fascination with this stuff is just blown away about what was just accomplished. I mean, just at the level of, you know, think about having to kind of land this lander, right, on another planet, right, and having to kind of anticipate all this stuff, the code that goes into that, the programming that goes into all that kind of stuff, and then say that it's going to land at 3:55 p.m., and it actually lands at 3:55 p.m. I mean, we don't have trains that show up at the right time, right? We don't have we barely have like buses that show up, if they show up at all.
We have a whole entire state that's going through a blackout.
Exactly. And And you know, again, I understand there's a lot of people, there's, you know, we get in all this camp stuff where we're, you know, is this worth the money and as all this other kind of stuff. And, you know, one of the things that I was listening to this, podcast kind of yesterday about it. And this is kind of what I tend to agree with, right? There's a lot of, you know, people who raise that concern, or I should say, this is from the Space Gal. Actually, she's she does kind of a bunch of space stuff. She's got a show on Nickelodeon and things like this. This is where she's the one who said it. And, you know, she said, look, this doesn't have to be an either or, right? That this is actually gonna be a both and. Like, it's not that we don't have the money, right? It's not that, like, you know, that, you know, if we just don't invest in kind of space exploration, that we'll actually have the money for all this other stuff. It's about political will. Right. It's we choose not to give people food. We choose to have energy infrastructure that is kind of destroyed. At the same time, we choose to go to Mars. So there is a political question there. Right. And I'm not, you know, unaware. And I recognize even the contradictions, even in my own kind of amazement with space travel and exploration. I recognize that, you know, people are hurting at the same time. Right. So, I mean, that exists as a contradiction within me. I'll kind of just lay that on the table. But I'm also, like, you know, fascinated. I mean, you know, I've been watching shows, as you know, like all week long, different kind of little documentaries, kind of short documentaries about the Perseverance rover mission and what they're going to do. And the Jezero crater is this place where they're pretty positive used to be an ancient lake bed. Right. And you can actually see on one side of the crater, there's kind of like a little bit of opening and looks clearly like a stream and kind of like a river delta kind of flowing out into the main kind of the terrain around it. And so that, of course, is one of the, you know, the birthplaces, if you will, of life. Right. In those kind of like those kind of spaces. And that was happening, they believe, at a similar time that life first formed on Earth. Right. So, like, Mars, one of the problems in Mars is, of course, that you have Mars does not have a magnetic field like Earth does, right? So that because it doesn't have a magnetic field, none of the solar radiation kind of is blocked by that magnetic field, which is one of the things that protects life on Earth. But at one time, they believe Mars did have that magnetic field. They're not quite sure why it stopped. It may have been there was a ginormous impact, right, from like a kind of asteroid or planetoid or something kind of years ago, which kind of pushed up part of the planet kind of one side. So that may have been what kind of stopped the core from turning or wherever, however that all happens. But so anyways, they're going to this place to kind of look at the at kind of the possibility that life formed on another planet, right? Doesn't mean they're looking for life today, right? They're saying they're looking for kind of microbial kind of emphasis. So that's one. So they're going to be digging in this. And one of this new rover, this rover looks a lot like the Curiosity rover, right? It's about the size of a car, kind of drop down and all this stuff. And it had to kind of, like, it was the most difficult landing that any rover on Mars has ever had to make, because it was in a space that was not just a wide open, right? It had to kind of do this self-navigation through these kind of like laser sightings and things like this and cameras to find a good landing place and then kind of maneuver over to that landing space. All that happened, it went off, like I said, kind of pretty much without a hitch. And now it's going to begin kind of exploring and drilling down into these areas and taking core samples, right? So in past, there's been, say, some chemical analysis stuff that's been on these rovers to figure out kind of what the composition of the soil is. This purpose here, the drill bits that it has, it actually has like a little hollow center to that. They're designed to kind of drill out kind of rock cores. About pieces of, you know, about the size of a piece of chalk, like a little bigger than that, and cap them and store them for a future mission, right, which will come to Mars for the purpose of picking up those samples and bringing them back to Earth. That will also be the first time. And that's probably not going to happen until probably about 2030, 2031, right, for that return mission, right? But this is kind of like just huge in so many levels. And, you know, packed underneath the rover was the Ingenuity helicopter, the Martian helicopter, where in record time, really had they developed this in about a year. Listen to this podcast that's called, I should look it up. It's called, I'm sorry for the delay. There's this podcast that is called, come on, give it to me. Should show right up. It's called, Making Space, right? And it focuses on the role of women in NASA on space exploration, kind of like through the history of like of that. And there's the, one of the women who's a head of the Ingenuity helicopter saying they basically developed this thing. They had like a tight deadline of like a year, a little over a year to get this done. And they had to kind of pack it all in a small package because it had to be very light because the Martian atmosphere is so thin. So in order to fly, you've got to have some sort of air resistance. Mars does have some atmosphere, but not enough. So they're doing this too as well. And basically it's going to like be this kind of little hopping helicopter that will go out and survey the land ahead of where the rover is going to go. So then the rover will be able to kind of make a determination about its pathway ahead of time, instead of having to kind of go up and find, ooh, obstacle, how do I get around this? But to doing some of that kind of like, you know, if you, robotic reconnaissance ahead of time is pretty amazing. So anyway, it's just, it was just kind of like, you know, one of those moments that I just, I, you know, I'll admit it, I'm in awe of. I'm in awe of those people that do that work, who can kind of do that degree of kind of like scientific work and figuring out trajectories and coding and programming, and then kind of relay it in such a way that is so kind of engaging. So they had a great program ahead of time too, as well. They had elementary school kids from all over the country, right? School kids from all over, I'm sorry, all over the world were calling in with questions and they're kind of answering it. And just like, you know, it's amazing, right? And this is a NASA mission. This is not a like SpaceX private for-profit mission. This is kind of like the thing that we could actually do, right? It's a scientific mission, and we could put our minds to do shit like this, right? If we can do that, we can also put our minds to kind of fixing an electrical grid, right? I mean, so I don't know, Sean. I mean, I don't know if you're, you know, as thrilled as I am about the Martian mission, I don't know if you saw any of it or anything like this, but I'm just, as you can tell, I've been geeking out on it all week.
I saw you tweeting about it. That's about it. I think Vosh might have done something, but yeah.
Must be good. I felt personally a little bit personally happy about this. I was listening to the Majority Report's AM Quickie, right? And they gave props to the Martian landing too as well, right? Without irony, right? Which I felt very close to my heart, so it was great. So yeah, so, and I actually did have, I had one of this Free Will's it's called Under Dawn's Red Sun. It was the closest I could get to the kind of like my Mars beer for the day, right? Nice red can and all that kind of stuff. And so cheers them with a little local Free Will. Was great. As I mentioned at the top of the show, so we're going to see a delay in terms of the moon landing for the Artemis program. That's probably not going to happen in 2024. There were, originally was allocations, a budget allocations by the House that was looking for a landing about, I think, in 2026, if I'm right. So my guess is that's probably what we're seeing there, but I'll kind of come back to that because there's also a lot of implications for what's going to happen in terms of space going forward. And I have to, all my other concern there is what I'm always watching for that kind of stuff is that, are they moving away from making this a NASA mission and trying to actually lean even heavier, or whatever you say that, on the private industry. And if that's the case, we know Jeff Bezos just stepped down as the head of Amazon, but he's still there for Blue Origin, which is their space program too as well. And unlike Elon Musk, who's always been targeting Mars, Bezos has been pretty kind of squarely focused on the moon. So just, again, keeping these pieces kind of in play in my head to see what this is going to mean, because my guess is that there's going to be a bunch of policy initiatives and changes that, again, who the hell pays attention to space policy other than a kind of small group of geeks like me? But that could have real implications about kind of the trajectory of kind of galactic capitalism. So we shall see. Also mentioned that China is kind of, you know, going to be launching its own space station. So there we go, folks. Pretty cool. I should also give props to, I think I mentioned this last week too, but, you know, China just also put in kind of like a new spacecraft around Mars. And for the first time, the United Arab Emirates also kind of sent an orbiter to Mars, right? So they're kind of in this play too as well. And I have to say, it's kind of interesting kind of combination because Kim Stanley Robinson, who's like, you know, one of my favorite sci-fi writers and who wrote the kind of classic Mars trilogy, Red Mars, Blue Mars, Green Mars. The three groups that we see, well, four, but three of the groups that we see kind of as key players across these different books are obviously the kind of like Americans, with Russian help, right? As we kind of see that going on. Secondly, Chinese, right? Especially when it comes to the moon. Thirdly, kind of kind of Arab coalitions, which is, again, he was early on this, and now you kind of see a real dedicated space program kind of in this area. And then he's always got a thing for the Swiss too as well. So I think that's his own little hobby horse about, you know, I think he loves Switzerland, but that's my guess. So just kind of interesting to see that stuff play out. So, but in news more close to home, everybody, that's probably much more relevant
and more important,
and more important and more relevant to everybody here back on Earth. Sean got lots of cool camera stuff.
Yeah, I did.
You did.
My lens I've been waiting to get for months now. Literally, it's been backordered for a couple months. So I decided to say, fuck the back order. Went somewhere else, found a used copy of it, got it there. I got it. This is from the money I got from shooting the Count Every Vote rallies. So that came in this week. It's a 35 millimeter, you know, an awesome 35 millimeter lens. Fell in love with this lens last year and I rented it a couple more times and then bought it. Because, you know, at that point I was losing money with how many times I was renting it. So kind of just bit the bullet and got it, and also got a really nice new camera bag, backpack. So,
yeah, is it warming up to you? Are you feeling it?
I'm actually like, so the bag came, like I've been like where my computer is set up. I have a view of the street right next to it. The FedEx truck pulled up as I was getting on my communications call. Before the podcast, so I blanked the screen, and you know, like JJ was speaking, and I just had the screen off, wasn't listening, just like, more or less like looking at my camera bag, fidgeting through it. But yeah, so camera bag came. It's really nice. It's a really good like midnight blue color, and looking forward to having some fun with it. And you know, so should be good.
Cool, man. Sorry, I just had to. My daughter was asking me a question.
She's I know. I was gonna do some commentary.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
Decided not to.
Yeah, no. That's fine. It's fine. I'm like, look, this is the world we live in right now, right? So, yeah, it is. Well, I'm glad. I mean, I have to say, some of the photos that you were posting with the new lens were just fantastic.
Oh yeah, I took the camera out. Took it out yesterday. I was like, the reason why I was pissed I didn't get it because I wanted to have it for some snowstorms.
Yeah. Because
getting photos of some of the stuff in Harrisburg during the snow is pretty cool. You know, the lens is super sharp. Also took some like really nice out of focus pictures, like with the super, super shallow depth of field.
Yeah.
Of the walking bridge, which is really fun to shoot when it's snowing out. Yeah. So, and I got really, it's super fucking sharp too. Like that one photo from looking up at the bridge.
I love that. I love that picture.
Like you can tell how sharp the lens is by looking at that photo.
Yeah.
It's a super fucking sharp lens. And that's not even that, like, the aperture of that's still only at, like, 2.8. So it's still, like, a shallow, like, wide open. It's still pretty wide open at that point.
Very cool, man. Well, I'm very happy. I know you've been waiting for this forever. I mean, it's like,
I finally have a really nice wide-angle lens, right? It's a 35 millimeter. So for those who don't know, like, I was stuck using a 50 millimeter. So if you may pretend, like, you have, like, horse blinders on and you, like, see a rectangle in front of you, that's like the 50 millimeter perspective. 35 millimeter is like your peripherals. So it's the closest to what your human eye sees. Mm-hmm. And so it has like that, like it's really good, like not crazy distortion, has really good aesthetics to it. And like edge to edge, like from corner to corner, this lens is fucking sharp.
That's awesome.
So,
well, the picture's been great. Keep them coming. I mean, literally, when Sean says, like, you know, he's excited to come, like, literally, he would send me updates at times, like, hey, my camera, it should be coming any day now. It's going to come in the mail. I know it's going to come in the mail, right? Like, I'm half convinced that, like, he set his desk up next to his window so he can watch where the packages are going to arrive.
Right? Oh, I sat at my fucking chair all day on Tuesday waiting for my lens to show up.
Oh, my God, that's great.
Like,
that's
awesome. Yeah, it didn't show up to like 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I sat in my fucking chair from like, and then I saw like the guy's UPS hat popping around, and I ran downstairs, grabbed a mask. I'm like, over here.
Oh God, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that is awesome. Well, I'm not sure what we're going to get in terms of new releases this week from Free Will, just because of the weather, as I put them back a little bit. I was just checking their Facebook page ahead of time and didn't see any kind of announcements coming up. But I can tell you some stuff that they have in stock right now that is just fantastic. They came out with last week a Blackberry Raspberry Mash, which is just freaking delicious. It's a sour ale with blackberry, raspberry, vanilla, and milk sugar. Comes in at 7.5 ABV. Their kind of thing on it is, expect the typical dense and fluffy treatment of this twist on the series. Jam, get it, packed with notes of fresh berry, compote, raspberry fruit bars, and water ice, topped with vanilla custard. That's kind of it. I read that last week too as well. I did come out. I did pick some up. It's fantastic. So that's definitely a recommendation. Another one which I really liked, I got to say, I think it's the first, their first off here. This is an American double IPA. It comes in at 8% ABV. It's called 35, right? Like I said, American double IPA, brewed with a variety of the favorite hops from around the globe, plentiful amounts of oats, touch of honey malt for color and additional sweetness. It's a really nice drinking beer. Doesn't too kind of like kind of bang you with the hops, right? As some as IPAs do, so that's a good one. But comes in at 8.8% ABV, so it's got a little heft to it. And then the last one, oh no, what'd I do with it? Oh, here we go. The last one I wanted to kind of give you a shout out to, because again, this is something that was, let me see if this is the right one here. Yes. This one surprised me, right? It's called Moon Servants. It is a Dunkel Lager, and it comes in at a kind of fairly light 4.8% ABV, but it's brewed with Munich malt and a combination of dark roasted malts and hopped with Tenniger, and classic sauce. It's lagered cold and in the dark for 5 weeks over the holiday break, and will pours a deep chestnut brown color with long-lasting tan head, followed by notes of semi-sweet chocolate and toasted marbled bread, finished off with what reminds you of never-ending bag of extra dark splits. Literally, it's great, right? A really smooth drinking beer, really kind of just nice body to it. It's a 4.8 ABV, so it's not going to kind of knock you out, right? Very sessionable, super beer. Strongly recommend Moon Servants, especially for those folks who are starting to get their fill of IPA. So definitely check it out.
So I want to end this on a, I guess, high note or low note, depending on how you look at it.
Great.
there was a instance of political violence a couple of about a month or two ago in Montgomery County, where the someone shot out the windows of the Montgomery County Democratic Committee's main offices.
Yeah, I remember this. Yeah,
so they CBS 20 or KYW News just broke the story. They arrested the man who did this. Shocking, 48-year-old white guy from the suburbs. They said Anthony Nero of Worcester is charged in the domestic terrorist threats, carrying a firearm without a license, and police say he sent a threatening email to the Democratic Committee on January 7th warning, violence is the only language you bloodsuckers understand.
There you go. That is freaking sick. Well, although I'm glad you bring this up too as well, because like I said, we have a special out to Coop on Wednesday. We're talking to Jordan Hopkins, who tracks a lot of these right wing extremist organizations. It's great investigative work. So do tune in on Wednesday then if you want to kind of dig into this a little bit more, because this stuff does get dangerous. And like we talked about last week, is that this is not going to go away.
This is the world that the Pennsylvania Republican Party has fostered over the past year now.
Bingo. That's Bradford's district. Just what Brian just said in the thing. Crazy. All right, man. I got to go get my daughter some lunch. So she's wanting to make herself some mac and cheese, but there's no pots that she can find that are kind of ready to use. So I've got to go up and give her an assist. So I'm going to have to cut it a little bit short. But anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
Nothing really too much.
All right, man. Well, hey, thank you all for tuning in, especially a special shout out to those folks kind of really active on YouTube today. Great discussion there. And want to remind everybody that if you listen to this podcast, head on over to our YouTube channel. Just look for Raging Chicken Press and hit that, smash that subscribe button, hit the bell so you know every time we go live. Got some great shows coming up on Out to Coop Live. We've got Omar Ray, candidate for Lehigh County Commissioner District 5 on Monday. We've got Jordan Hopkins talking about kind of right-wing extremism PA on Wednesday. And some great shows coming up in the next week, so kind of make sure you're in there with us. Sean, man, have a good weekend. Stay safe. I don't know if it's icy up on you, but it's kind of icy around here. And we'll talk to you soon, man.
All right, talk to you later.
All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We're going to go out once again with one of my faves, Jonathan Mann. There are no people in the future. And tune in for Out to Coop Live next week and help support us, right? Go to kind of patreon.com/rcpress today.
See ya!